ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। हरे कृष्णा। वी रीडिंग टुडे फ्रॉम कैंटो 9 चैप्टर 4 एंटाइटल्ड अम्बरीश महाराज ऑफेंडेड बाय दुर्वास मुनि टेक्स्ट 2। भारातरो भंक्त किम्मयम्, भारातरो किं भंक्त किम्मयम्, भ्रातरो भंक्त किम्मयम्, भजमा पितरं तव, भजाम पितरं तव, भजाम पितरं तव, त्वं मामार्यस्तथा भंक्षुर, त्वं ममार्यस्तथा भंक्षुर, त्वं ममार्यस्तथा भंक्षुर, मा पुत्रका तद् अदृथा, मा पुत्रका तद् अदृथा। Nabaga inquired, "My dear brothers, what have you given to me as my share of our father's property?" His elder brothers answered, "We have kept our father as your share." But when Nabaga went to his father and said, "My dear father, my elder brothers have given me you as my share of property," the father replied, "My dear son, do not rely upon their cheating words. I am not your property." We've been allotted text 2 to 16. So what I'll do is I will read all the 16 verses and then we will discuss. Nabaga's father said, "All the descendants of Angira are now going to perform a great sacrifice. But although they are very intelligent, on every sixth day they will be bewildered in performing sacrifice and will make some mistakes in their daily duties." Nabaga was very simple hearted. Therefore, when he went to his father, the father, in compassion for his son, suggested that as a means of livelihood, Nabaga could go to the descendants of Angira and take advantage of their misgivings in performing yajna. Nabaga's father continued, "Go to those great souls and describe two Vedic hymns pertaining to Vaishvadev. When the great sages have completed the sacrifice and are going to the heavenly planets, they will give you the remnants of the money they have received from the sacrifice. Therefore, go there immediately." Thus, Nabaga acted exactly according to the advice of his father. And the great sages of the Angiri dynasty gave him all their wealth and went to the heavenly planets. Thereafter, while Nabaga was accepting the riches, a black-looking person from the north came to him and said, "All the wealth from the sacrificial arena belongs to me." Nabaga then said, "These riches belong to me. The great saintly persons have delivered them to me." When Nabaga said this, the black-looking person replied, "Let us go to your father and ask him to settle our disagreement." In accordance with this, Nabaga inquired from his father. The father said, "Whatever the great sages sacrificed in the arena of the Daksha Yajna, they offered to Lord Shiva as his share. Therefore, everything in the sacrificial arena certainly belongs to Lord Shiva." Thereupon, after offering obeisances to Lord Shiva, Nabaga said, "O worshipable Lord, everything in this arena of sacrifice is yours. This is the assertion of my father. Now with great respect, I bow my head before you, begging for your mercy." Lord Shiva said, "Whatever your father has said is the truth, and you also are speaking the same truth. Therefore, I, who know the Vedic mantras, shall explain transcendental knowledge to you." Lord Shiva said, "Now you may take all the wealth remaining from the sacrifice, for I give it to you." After saying this, Lord Shiva, who is the most ardent of the religious principles, disappeared from that place. if one hears and chants or remembers this narration in the morning and evening with great attention, he certainly becomes learned, experienced in understanding the Vedic hymns, and expert in self-realization. From Nabaga, Maharaj Ambarish took birth. Maharaj Ambarish was an exalted devotee, celebrated for his great merits. Although he was cursed by an infallible Brahmana, the curse could not touch him. King Parikshit inquired, "O great personality, Maharaj Ambarish was certainly most exalted and meritorious in his character. I wish to hear about him. How surprising it is that the curse of a Brahmana, which is insurmountable, could not act upon him." Shukadeva Goswami said, "Maharaj Ambarish, the most fortunate personality, achieved the rule of the entire world, consisting of 7 islands, and achieved inexhaustible, unlimited opulence and prosperity on earth. Although such a position is rarely obtained, Maharaj Ambarish did not care for it at all. For he knew very well that all such opulence is material, like that which is imagined in a dream. Such opulence will ultimately be destroyed. The king knew that any non-devotee who attains such opulence merges increasingly into material nature's mode of darkness." Purport by A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. For a devotee, material opulence is insignificant, whereas for a non-devotee, material opulence is a cause of increasing bondage. For a devotee knows that anything material is temporary, whereas a non-devotee regards the temporary so-called happiness as everything and forgets the path of self-realization. Thus, for the non-devotee, material opulence is a disqualification for spiritual advancement. Hare Krishna. Sitting here probably is the most embarrassing situation in my so many years of devotional service. Service is of different kinds. Service is painful and service is pleasurable. And some services are painfully pleasurable. So this service which I'm trying to render is definitely among the third category. And I just wish that whatever good comes out is accepted, and whatever bad is rejected and hidden. I remember while sitting here, the Srimad Bhagavatam specifically talks about what are the joys of somebody in the household life. One of the joys is mentioned that to see small children, you know, talk broken words, that's a great pleasure in household life. So I was thinking similarly in the Brahmacharya Ashram, for a senior brahmachari to see somebody new, you know, speaking some philosophy is a great source of pleasure. So even if that is the case, and that's the only thing I'm going to render, I think it's worth it. We will discuss this topic of Srimad Bhagavatam verse by verse, because each verse has so many lessons to teach us and so many understandings to give us. So I just thought it will be appropriate, rather than taking a theme and discussing the theme, we can take verses and discuss understandings of the verses. The first verse, Nabaga is inquiring from his brothers. Yesterday we saw that Nabaga, he has been in his spiritual master's house. He's been living a long, long time in the place of a spiritual master. And finally, his brothers thought that he's not going to come back and be a grihastha. They thought that he's going to stay a brahmachari lifelong and take up the sannyas order. But when he came back and he asked for his share of property, his brothers were surprised. And having already distributed the property among themselves and not wanting to share it with him, they gave a very clever answer. They said that, "My dear brother, we have kept our father as your share." So the Nabaga, he went to his father and asked him that, "My elder brothers have given you as my share of property." So his father told him that your elder brothers are cheating you. So one lesson we can understand is Nabaga has undergone a lot of training and come back after a lot of training. Ideally, training leads to simplicity. So for him, when his brothers told him that, you know, your share is your father, He immediately understood and accepted. He didn't go to argue. So because he had simplicity in him, he could accept even that, you know, which was such a foolish proposal. But then, along with simplicity, you also need to be worldly wise. There is a nice verse in the Chanakya Niti which says, Natyantam saralena bhavyam gatva pasya vanasthalim chidyante saralastatra kubjasthisanti padapa. It says, a man should be simple-hearted and straight-mannered, but he should not be a simpleton. And the example, very appropriate example is given, that if you go to the jungles, you will see that trees that are growing, you know, very awkwardly, very, you know, with lot of branches and lot of bushes, very awkward growing trees, they are not cut by the, you know, woodcutters. The trees that are simple and straight, they are the ones that are cut first because they're easy to manage. So the verse, the Chanakya Niti, it says that one has to be simple-hearted and straight-mannered, but one can't be a simpleton. He has to be worldly-wise. There are many pastimes in Srila Prabhupada's life which talks about simple-manneredness or simplicity, but at the same time being worldly-wise. One specifically comes to my mind where Srila Prabhupada went to the Dai Nippon Company to finalize his Gita printing contract. So he was having a meeting with the directors of the company. And while they were having a meeting, Tamal Krishna Maharaj was along with Prabhupada. And Prabhupada, he said that y'all should charge us $1.35 as a price for per book. So the moment Prabhupada said this, you know, the Dining Pond Company, these people, they started arguing. This, come on, this is too less. And they started quoting the prices of the paper. They started quoting, you know, how much they have to expend on printing, so many things they were trying to argue. But Srila Prabhupada, he started arguing in a different way. He said, ISKCON society is a very poor society. You know, we don't have any funds. We are working on charity. So there's no relationship between the cost of paper and in charity in one sense, you know. But Prabhupada, he brought this point in picture. And then Srila Prabhupada, he said, I will allow, you know, I don't want to say anything more. Let my secretary decide. So he put the whole burden on Tamal Krishna Maharaj. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj, you know, he was thinking, what should I do now? So Tamal Krishna Maharaj, what he started doing, he said, actually what Prabhupada said is too much. He quoted 40 cents lesser than what Prabhupada said. He said, this is the price only we can pay. So they had an argument now, the Dai Nippon Company directors and Tamal Krishna Maharaj, they're having an argument, you know. And then finally Prabhupada said, okay, I'll settle it. And then he said, $1.25, that's it. And this, the Dai Nippon Company person said, wow, this is great, we agree to it. So the point was, Prabhupada, he managed to get a quote which was much lesser than what even he proposed in the beginning. This is, you know, though Prabhupada personally in his habits is a very simple person, you know, very simple person, but he's not a simpleton. So here, though this Nabagha was a very simple person, he had one strength in him. What is the strength? He had the strength of consulting the right authorities. Because he consulted the right authority, he could get a right decision. So sometimes, personally, we may have a disqualification, but if you use other strengths, then we can learn a lot. Like they were, I think this was Parashar Bhatt who was giving this, telling this story. He talks about two ants who were sitting on top of a hill, and they were having a discussion. So one ant suggested to the other ant, you know, he said, can you jump over from this hill to the other hill? So the first ant said, yeah, I can do it. So the second ant said, show me. So the first ant was looking for, you know, how to exactly do it. Then he saw a lion. He saw the lion was going to leap from this mountain to the next mountain. So this ant, he went, climbed on the foot of the lion and sat there. And lo and behold, the lion jumped, reached the other mountain. And then the ant got down. So the second ant said, you're cheating. This is not the way to do it. He said, whatever it is, the condition of that, I have to jump from one mountain to another. I jumped. So sometimes we have a defect. We have a weakness. So if we take shelter, we learn to take shelter of the right authorities. That weakness can also become our strength. There are many instances in the scriptures where diplomacy is also glorified. Like when Ramananda Rai was talking to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there is a nice verse which comes. It says, Rajamantri Ramananda Vyavahara Nipuna Rajapriti Kahi Dravela Praburmana. It says that when Pratapurudra Maharaj was trying to approach Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and trying to take shelter of Lord Chaitanya, Chaitanya was rejecting him continuously because he was a king. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a sannyasi. So as a sannyasi, he didn't want anything to do with the king. But Ramananda Rai, he very cleverly suggested to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. What he started doing is, he started describing the love of the king to Lord Chaitanya. So slowly, 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 you know, over a period of time, Ramananda Rai kind of made positive investments in the heart of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu towards the king. So this is one interesting technique of building relationships between two people. And if you are mediating, one of the positive techniques is that make positive deposits about the other person. You know, so he was very cleverly making. And in that purport, Prabhupada mentions a very nice point. He says, a diplomat in the material world knows how to deal with people, especially in political affairs. And then further, Prabhupada mentions that different devotees of the Lord, like Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, and so many others, Raghunath Das Goswami, he quotes different instances how each of them, though they were simple in their lifestyle, though they were simple in their mindsets, but still they were not simpletons. They could deal expertly in this world. And Prabhupada concludes the purport by saying that the conclusion is that diplomacy used for the service of the Lord is a form of devotional service. Very interesting. The next verse talks about, now Nabagha has told his father that, you know, this is the situation. Father has told him that they're cheating you. And now Nabagha's father says that he gives him a proposal. He says, all the descendants of Angira are now performing a great sacrifice. But although they are very intelligent, on every sixth day, they will be bewildered in performing sacrifice and they will make mistakes. So the understanding is that, it's a very interesting understanding. It says, the father, you know, attached to his son, he could have told him, go and fight, you know, go for a court case. But what the father said, he gave a completely alternative solution. So sometimes, this is the mood of the Vedas. The Brahminical understanding of life is that life, spiritual life has to be practiced very peacefully. And in case some wealth is required, you have to earn it, but the wealth should not be earned with such an anxiety that it takes a toll of your spiritual life directly. So the mood of the Vedas is that the Brahmanas practice sacrifice and detachment and the Kshatriyas fight against Adharma. So here was a typical case of Adharma where, you know, his brothers cheated, you know, another brother. But the father, instead of saying fight, he proposes the Brahminical way of solving the problem. Focus on something else. Find another solution. He said, Angira's sons are doing some sacrifice. Go there and you will find wealth over there. So this, the understanding is that the spiritual world, we are trying to practice spiritual life and we are trying to lead a life which is simplicity, filled with simplicity and focus on the spiritual goals. So sometimes developing the activities of the spiritual world is very easy. You know, the process of chanting, the process of dancing, the process of kirtan and the process of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, that's very easy. But developing the mentality of the spiritual world is very difficult. So many times it's easy to externally act spiritually, but to develop the right mentality is very tough. And the concept of detachment is also a very powerful concept here, that Nabagha has got trained for so many years in the process of simplicity and the process of detachment and the process of spiritual practice. And now he's come in a situation and the father is encouraging him to practice what he has learned so many years. Practice detachment. There's a nice story of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur which brings about this concept of detachment very nicely. Once Bhakti Siddhanta, he was giving a very heavy lecture about detachment, and Bhakti Siddhanta can be really heavy sometimes. And when he was giving this heavy lecture on detachment, after the lecture, he came back to his room and he was studying, writing something. And suddenly a monkey came into his room and stole two bananas and ran away. So Bhakti Siddhanta, he saw that. What he did, he literally got up from his desk And while getting up, he kind of toppled his table. All the ink spilled out. You know, his papers got ruined. And he ran after that monkey. And he somehow got the two bananas back. So his disciple was completely bewildered. He said, Maharaj, you just gave us such a heavy class on detachment. And what about two bananas? You know, what is there in two bananas? So Bhaktisiddhanta explained that these two bananas don't belong to me. It belongs to Srimati Radharani. So Radhanath Swami Maharaj gives a very wonderful understanding of this whole thing. He says, the perfection of yoga is to become detached. And the perfection of detachment is to become attached to Krishna. So unless we develop the right mood of detachment, it's very difficult to get attached to Krishna. So here Nabhagha is bringing out a very nice point, very nice concept, that Nabhagha's father. So rather than being attached to the wealth that you are not interested in anyways, you're interested in spiritual life, why not focus on that and look for another alternative instead of fighting? And then another understanding is that he says that the sons of Angira performing sacrifice, they are very intelligent, but they have a defect in them. They're going to make some mistakes. So Nabhagha teaches him some Vedic mantras. He says, go and use it there. So the understanding is that this universe is designed in such a way that one person's mistake is advantage of another person. So the descendants of Angira were very, very intelligent, but they had a flaw in them. And Nabhagha was a very simple person, but he had a good guide. So this combination, right? This combination works perfectly. The material world is designed in such a way that you have to depend on others. If you don't depend on others, there is always every chance of ego flaring up. So Krishna arranges the world in such a way that it's always, you know, a give and take which works, the mood of cooperation. And then further, Nabhagha's father says, he says, go to the great souls and describe the two Vedic hymns pertaining to Vaishvadev. When the great sages have completed the sacrifice and are going to the heavenly planets, they will give you the remnants of the money they have received from the sacrifice. And therefore, go there immediately. And Nabhagha, the son of the father, you know, he immediately follows the advice of the father and goes to where the great sages of the Angira dynasty are performing a sacrifice. And exactly he follows what his father says. And all the sages, what they do? They give their wealth and they go to the heavenly planets. So here the concept of cooperation comes in, in picture. The concept of cooperation and the concept of competition is very interesting. Like Govindpuru was mentioning once that this world, you can deal with the world in two ways. Either you cooperate, you compete. That means it's what you call as svardhatmak jivan, svardhatmak lifestyle. That means you compete with others. So it's a win-lose. One person wins, the other person loses. And the second way of seeing the world is sahakaratmak. That means a cooperative spirit. That means you win and the others also win. Win together. And the highest way of seeing this world is the sevatmak spirit. That means you lose and others win. This can only happen in the spiritual world or in the spiritual circles, where you are concerned about others' victory rather than your loss. So here, Nabhagha's father is teaching him the concept of cooperation. And there are very nice lessons we can learn from this also. One has to give up all one's possessions to live this, while living this earth. Like Angira's sons, they had to go to the heavenly planets. But to go to the heavenly planets, they couldn't carry all their wealth with them. They had to give it up. So now, very interesting understanding is that for Nabhagha, for this boy, the wealth was everything because he was beginning his material life. You know, he was beginning his life. So he needed that wealth. But for the sons of Angira, that wealth was insignificant because they got a higher wealth, the heavenly abodes. So happiness is a very relative concept. You know, it's very relative in concept. Like one lady, she was walking by a store, you know, it was a garment store, a lot of garments. And while she was walking by, she saw a doll outside displayed. The doll was wearing a very beautiful sari. So this lady, she had to pass through that store every day to go to her office. And every day she would pass through the store, that sari would actually attract her attention very much. And her mind was very disturbed. She was getting attached to that sari. But she didn't have the money. She didn't even have the courage to ask how much it costs. where the shop was a very costly shop. So then, many days she was constantly in disturbance. From morning to evening, she would only think about this sari. This is how attachment is. And then one fine day, she decided she's going to solve this problem forever. She walked into the shop and she asked the shopkeepers, what is the cost of that sari? So they told her, 3,000 rupees. So she said, pack it for me. So they went inside and got a replica of the same sari to her. And they gave it to her. You can pay. So she said, no, I want that sari, what that doll is wearing. So they said, come on, it's the same sari. It's not different. It's the same sari. And in fact, this is a new one. She said, no, 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 I want that one only. So then, you know, somehow or the other, they had to listen to her because she's a customer. And customer is God. So they removed the sari from that doll and they put another dress on the doll. And they packed the sari and gave it to her. So she said, thank you, and she was walking away. So they said, come on, you wanted to buy it. Why are you not buying it? No, no, no. She said, I'll explain. Every time I would walk by this side, the sari was disturbing my mind so much. So I wanted somehow or the other the sari be removed. So that's the only reason I did this. So now she has achieved a purpose, she walked away. So the concept of material attachment is so powerful that, and the concept of happiness is always relative. One person's happiness is another person's joy. When the lady walked into the shop, this customer, the shopkeeper was very happy. And when she walked out of the shop, the lady was very happy. It's a very relative term. So here, the sons of Angira, they went back to the heavenly planet. They were happy about that. But Nabaga was very happy that they left the wealth over here. So he could use that wealth for himself. And another concept that is emphasized in this verse is the concept of reincarnation. Concept of future births. After death, there is no, this concept of future births is there. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was giving a very nice understanding of what reincarnation signifies. He says, reincarnation is like a lock and key. Reincarnation is like a lock and key. The lock of reincarnation signifies a mandatory return to this world. Mandatory return to this world. And the key signifies release from this world to an eternal spiritual world. Very interesting understanding of reincarnation. And then further, Nabaga, you know, now what he did, he accepted all the riches of the sons of Angira and he was very happy about it. And suddenly what happened? Thereafter, while Nabaga was accepting the riches, a black looking person from the north came to him and said, all the wealth from the sacrificial arena belongs to me. The lesson is that in this material world, there is always opposition and competition. You know, these nine kind of fears that Chanakya Niti talks about. And one of the kind of fears is that for somebody who is competent, he's always fearful of somebody else who's going to be more intelligent than him. That's the fear in this world. So here, Nabaga had got all the wealth, but another person came claiming that this is my wealth. So even if you think that you have eliminated all the problems of this world, there'll be one more problem that you have to solve. So, constant phase of competition. So then Nabaga, he started arguing with this person who came. It was Lord Shiva. Nabaga said, all these riches belong to me because the sages have given it to me and gone away. And Lord Shiva said, let us not fight. Let us go to your father. Let your father resolve the problem. So, it's a nice example of conflict resolution in this world where if you have conflicts between two individuals, rather than fighting and trying to solve it among yourselves with our two egos, you know, in place, go to a third person who is neutral and who is detached and who is intelligent. And Lord Shiva, just see, it may seem very foolish that Lord Shiva chose his father. He could have chosen the third party, you know, but Lord Shiva chose his father. Why? Concept of detachment, the concept of intelligence, and the concept of being a neutral party is there. Like even there's a story in the Puran which talks about Prahlad Maharaj, his son Virochan and another person, you know, Sudanva. Sudanva also was a son of Angira Muni only. So they both had a disagreement and they had a disagreement on one girl, Keshini her name was. Both of them wanted to marry the same girl, Keshini. So they had a fight. They were thinking who deserves that girl. So they decided that they're going to go to a neutral party. And whom did they choose? They chose Prahlad Maharaj, the father of Virochan, rather than choosing somebody else. And very interestingly, Prahlad Maharaj, he said that the one who should marry, the one who deserves to marry Keshini is Sudanva, and he didn't choose his son. And because Prahlad Maharaj acted in such a clear and fair way, Sudanva said, I will not kill Virochan, because the bet was that whoever wins can kill the other person. So he said, I will not kill Virochan, rather Virochan can just wash my feet and I will be happy with that. So here again, the concept of using the father as a neutral party is there. The scale of justice, where in the American court laws, there is a statue which is always kept, which is a woman who is blindfolded. And she is holding a scale in her right hand and a sword in her left hand. The scale, it signifies, the woman actually represents wisdom, wisdom. And the blindfold, which is there on the woman, it represents the concept that justice is impartial, no partiality. And the scale, it represents the laws of karma. And every individual has this scale in his life, this scale. And one side of the scale represents the good karma, and the other side of the scale represents the bad karma. And according to what you deposit into the scale, that side goes down. And the perfection of life is that if you can balance the scales when you are at the point of death, so that you are not accountable to either good or bad karma, you can get out. And this lady with a sword in her hand, why she uses a sword in her hand? For two purposes. If the good, the bad side, the bad karma is low, the lady uses a sword and strikes the person. That means justice strikes. Somebody is doing something bad, he is struck by the laws of nature. And then he has to rectify, or he has to face a reaction, so that the scale is balanced. And the key to balance the scale, the key to balance the scale is a very interesting key. It says, the weighing mechanism, how you put weights into the scale, good or bad side, is the words, thoughts, and deeds we do throughout our lifetime. Every word we say, every thought that we have, and every deed that we do puts weights into the two scales. So if you can balance, using the right words, using the right thoughts, and using the right deeds, you can achieve perfection. There is a very nice verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 11th canto, 13th chapter, text 7, which talks about this concept of using the body, using the vehicle that we have to achieve liberation, achieve perfection. It says, Venu sangarsha jo vanir, dagdva samyati tadvanam. Evam guna vyatyaya jo, deha samyati tatkriya. It says that a very interesting example, the bamboo, in a bamboo forest, two sticks of bamboo, they touch each other, they rub against each other. And because of the friction, a fire is generated. And that fire burns the whole forest of bamboo. So fire is born from bamboo, it burns the bamboo. So similarly, the Bhagavatam says that the body, the mind, the body, and the gross and subtle bodies basically are born from the three modes of material nature. And they are born because of the sense of competition. And when these interact, body, subtle body and gross body are born. And what it says is that you should use your subtle body and gross body to acquire knowledge, acquire enlightenment. And with that enlightenment, burn up the body, give up the body. So you use the same thing to attain perfection. So the body and the gross and subtle bodies are born because of competition and because of interaction with the three modes. So you use the same body and the same mind to come out of the three modes. So here Nabaga is very clearly said that, so Lord Shiva chose Nabaga as Nabaga's father as a neutral party. And Nabaga's father immediately said, whatever the great sages have sacrificed in the arena of Dakshayagya, they offer it to Lord Shiva. So Lord Shiva is the right person who owns this wealth. This is his declaration, this is his justice. So the understanding from this text is that fairness is a sign of a great devotee. His fairness is a sign of a great soul. And here, his father, he showed fairness at two levels. Naturally, a father attached to his son. And naturally, he favored him. But here, Nabaga's father did not favor his son. Rather, he chose the truth the right decision. And that is easy. You know, not favoring your family members is very easy. But he also did not favor his own ego. Because who was the one who gave the idea to this fellow, to his son, to Nabaga? His father. His father said, go there, you will get wealth. And now he has got wealth. And he's now somebody else is questioning that wealth. So naturally, the father's ego has to be hurt. Because it was his idea. For people to support the truth, when it is for somebody else, it's easy. But to support the truth, when it is questioning their own ideas, their own ideologies, their own interests, that is even more difficult. So his father neither thought that this truth this fact is right because his son will not get the wealth, nor did he think that I am right. But rather he said, what is right? And then he gave. So this concept of cooperation, this very interesting understanding that a leader, when he has to make any decisions, he has to forego his own opinions. Maharaj, Radhana Swami Maharaj made a very interesting statement some months back. He said that one should burn one's opinions in the fire of cooperation. Very interesting concept. If you analyze the way the Kauravas and the way the Pandavas acted, this is exactly how they acted. The Kauravas, rather than burning their opinions in the fire of cooperation, they each one ignited his own fire of rebellion. And the Pandavas, rather than igniting their own individual fires, they sacrificed all their opinions in the fire of cooperation. You can just analyze it very nicely. If you just talk about team spirit of the Kauravas and team spirit of the Pandavas, Kauravas practically had no team spirit. They all fought their own individual wars. Bhishma fought because he wanted to protect the throne. Drona fought because he had eaten salt of the throne. And Shalya, he fought. He had no reason to fight on the side of the Duryodhan. He only fought because he was cheated. And Karna fought because he wanted to take revenge against Arjun. Nothing else. And he wanted to show his friendship to Duryodhan. And among them, among each other, none of them got along with each other. Bhishma didn't get along with Karna. Karna didn't get along with Shailya. Shailya didn't get along with Bhishma. Then Shakuni didn't get along with Bhishma. So like that, each one had fights among themselves only. So there was practically no team spirit in them. Whereas in the Pandava side, they had one team and one spirit. They had, all of them had respect for Yudhishthir and Krishna. And all of them had awe and reverence for Arjun and Bhim. So their whole understanding was, if I cooperate with this vision of Yudhishthir and Krishna and the power of Bhim and Arjun, we will win. That was their team spirit. And if you discuss the individual motives of the Kauravas and the individual motives of the Pandavas, very interesting. Except for Duryodhan, nobody else actually wanted the war. And the four main generals of the Kaurava army, they had very strong ties of affection towards the Pandavas. Bhishma, grandchildren. Pandavas were the grandchildren of Bhishma. And Bhishma had vowed that he'll never kill all the Pandavas. But what he said, I'll kill 1,000 soldiers in a day. You know, or a few lakhs soldiers in a day. Drona, students. He said, I will not kill the Pandavas, but I will only capture them. Karna, brother. The Pandavas, he was the brother to the Pandavas. He said, he promised not to kill any of the Pandavas except Arjun. Shalya, he was the maternal uncle of Nakul and Sahadev. And he said he loved the Pandavas. And in fact, he was helping the Pandavas by, you know, kind of demotivating Karna at some point. And whereas on the Pandava side, they had common goals. And each one had individual targets, but their individual targets was one with the team's agenda. You know, they had all individual targets. Drona had targeted Drishyadumna. Shikhandi had targeted Bhishma. Satyaki had targeted Burishrava. Arjuna had targeted Karna. So each one had their... Bhima targeted all the, you know, Duryodhana and all his brothers. So each one had their own targets, but each target kind of amended with the whole interest of the army. So if you see in that way, this opinions, the spirit of cooperation was powerfully exhibited in the Pandava army. And anyway, further, the next verse talks about, after offering obeisances to Lord Shiva, now here the father has declared a verdict, the Lord Shiva is the owner of all the wealth. The son is defeated. right? All the wealthy has to surrender to Lord Shiva. How does he act? It's another very interesting concept. O worshipable Lord, Nabaka says, everything in this sacrificial arena is yours. This is the assertion of my father. So he says, now with great respect, I bow my head before you and beg for your mercy. Here, very interesting. He had faith in the words of the authorities. And he had detachment. This is the result of training. Somebody might think that Nabaga as a brahmachari is a failure. But what is the success of Nabaga? 5 points. The first thing is that he learned to follow great authorities. The second point is that he had detachment from personal motives, success and wealth. The third thing is that he was always seeking shelter of higher powers, took shelter of Lord Shiva. The fourth thing is that he had humility. Even after being defeated, he was ready to accept shelter of the same person whom he was defeated by. And the fifth thing is that he had the strength to say, I am wrong. This is the success of Nabaga as a brahmachari, training. So now, when you have faith in great authorities, that gives you a lot of power. Like one Srila Prabhupada's disciple, he came to Prabhupada and he said that all our people, this is in America, so all our friends, all the people I meet, you know, when I talk to them about yoga, when I talk to them about the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, they always ask me, have you been to India? So what should I say? He asked Prabhupada. So Prabhupada said, tell them that I have not been to India, but India has come to me. So Prabhupada acted as India. He acted as a representative of the spiritual knowledge. And when people had faith in Srila Prabhupada, then they could say that we didn't have to go to India to learn this knowledge. India came to me. So this faith in authorities is very important. And then the next concept is what this. So now Nabaga has given up all the wealth, given it to Lord Shiva. So now how Lord Shiva reacts? He says that whatever your father has said is the truth. And you are also speaking the same truth. Therefore, I who know all the Vedic mantras shall explain to you transcendental knowledge. Very interesting. Here, what did Nabaga and his father do? They sacrificed the relative truths of this world. And what did they get? They got the absolute truth. So when Nabaga and his father sacrificed the relative truth, what are the relative truth? The relative truth was that the wealth was theirs. You know, the Angira Munis, the sons, they gave it to them. But they sacrificed that relative truth. And they took shelter of Lord Shiva. He said, you are the owner of all this wealth. And we take shelter of you. What did Lord Shiva do in return? He gave them knowledge of the absolute truth. So if you are attached to the relative truths of this world, you lose the absolute truth. Typical is the case of Dasharatha Maharaj. When Dasharatha Maharaj, he had given a promise to Kaikeyi that he's going to give 2 boons. And Kaikeyi, you know, deposited the post-dated check. And she asked for the 2 boons. And then those 2 boons happened to be separation from Lord Ram. And Dasharatha agreed because he was morally bound. He was attaching himself to the relative truth of this world. So because Dasharatha attached to the relative truth, absolute truth, Lord Ram got separated from him. And because absolute truth went away, he lost his life. And Bharat Maharaj, what was the truth? What was the relative truth of Bharat's life? The relative truth of Bharat's life is that he is the owner of the kingdom of Ayodhya now. His father has declared it. Lord Ram has declared it. Everybody has declared it. He's the owner. He gave up that relative truth. Why? Because he said, I want to take shelter of the absolute truth, Lord Ram. And because he took shelter of the absolute truth, Lord Ram actually gave him his mercy. And he was present with him in the form of his sandals. And later on, he was physically also present with him. So when people detach themselves from, and more than anything else, Dasharatha Maharaj, by taking shelter of the relative truth, he gained infamy. And Bharat Maharaj, by taking shelter of the absolute truth, he gained great fame. And if you understand it in this way, both Nabaga and, you know, Nabaga's son, both of them were detached from the relative truth of this world. And Lord Shiva was happy with them and he offered them transcendental knowledge, which was the absolute truth. So similarly, if you can see in Arjuna's life also, Arjuna was detached from the kingdom. He was detached from the relative truth of this world. Therefore, Krishna thought he was qualified to learn the absolute truth. Of course, there are many things. This concept of morality, you know, is very interesting. The people think that somebody who has, you know, spiritual qualities, somebody who is thinking the spiritual life is important, for him morality is not important. Actually, here we see that somebody who is practicing spiritual life, The byproduct of spiritual life is morality. You have to, if you're strong in spiritual life, you have to be morally right also. So here, Nabaga and his father both are strong spiritually, but the byproduct of their strength and the spiritual life was they could be moral, they could be truthful. So going further, Lord Shiva, he says that you may take all the wealth. And now, Lord Shiva, what he has done, he has given him the transcendental knowledge. And now what Lord Shiva is doing is very interesting. He says, you take all the wealth also. He says, I have given you knowledge, no problem. Now you keep this wealth also for yourself. So somebody might think that following a life of truthfulness, following a life of principles is maybe spiritually gaining, but materially it may be a loss. But here, Lord Shiva is showing that not only you gain spiritually, but you also gain materially. What Lord Shiva did, he gave back the wealth also. So then the conclusion of this whole episode is that one, if one hears, chants and remembers this narration in the morning and evening with great attention, he certainly becomes learned, experienced in understanding the Vedic hymns, and expert in self-realization. So now comes to the real understanding of why this whole story came into the Bhagavatam. From Nabaga, Maharaj Ambarish took birth. Maharaj Ambarish was a great exalted devotee, celebrated for his great merits. Although he was cursed by a Brahmana, the curse could not touch him. This is Shukadeva Goswami is explaining this. So the understanding is that samskaras are acquired from birth itself. So where did Ambarish Maharaj get the quality of being truthful, get the quality of being strong in his practices of spirituality? His father. So exalted parentage also leads to exalted sons, if the samskaras are delivered in the right way. So here, Nabaga's detachment from wealth actually shows that he not only detached from the wealth, but he actually got a strong attachment to a great spiritual culture, which not only remains with him, but also goes down his line to all his descendants. And Ambarish Maharaj acquired the same properties. And now, Parikshit Maharaj, at this point of time, he intervenes in Shukadeva Goswami's narration. He says, O great personality, Maharaj Ambarish was certainly most exalted and meritorious in his character. I wish to hear about him. How surprising is that he is cursed by a Brahmana, but still he is insurmountable. What was the strength that he had? So here, the analysis is that Parikshit's enthusiasm is like a salt in food. If you compare Srimad Bhagavatam to be like a barfi, Parikshit's questions are like the nuts in the barfi, It just makes the taste of the Bhagavatam much more sweeter. By his enthusiasm and by his, intelligence, he makes the understanding of the Bhagavatam more practical and more sweet. And the interesting part, if you compare the life of Parikshit Maharaj and the life of Ambarish Maharaj, both of them saw Krishna two times in their life. Parikshit Maharaj saw Krishna when he was, and the interesting part was, both of them saw Krishna in one sense at the time of their greatest calamity, at the time of the death probably. Parikshit Maharaj saw Krishna two times, both the times after he was dead. The first time he saw Krishna when he was killed in the womb of his mother, Uttara, he was a dead body. But then Krishna revived him. And the second time he saw Krishna, of course he was seeing him eternally, but second time he saw Krishna was one Takshak, the snake bird bit him and he went back to the spiritual world. So both the times, greatest calamities, but he could see Krishna. And Ambarish Maharaj also, he could see Krishna the first time when Durvasa Muni cursed him, he could see Krishna in the form of the Sudarshan Chakra. And the second time he could see Krishna when he went back to the spiritual world. So meeting Krishna is not important. What you do after meeting Krishna is important. So Parikshit Maharaj met Krishna in the beginning of his life. But how did he use that knowledge of meeting Krishna? Very interesting. There's a nice story in the Ramayana which talks about this aspect of meeting Krishna. Lord Ram, the monkey army of Lord Ram was very proud, at one point of time when the fight was going on. They were thinking that we are the cause of, the victory of Ram. Then Ram, what he did, he kind of created an illusion. And then suddenly all the demons came and attacked the monkeys. And all the monkeys ran away. And then what Lord Ram did, very interesting. He made all the demons look like Lord Ram only. He made all the demons look like Lord Ram. And the demons were looking at each other. They were seeing Ram only next to him, next to them. So they started killing each other. And they killed each other and destroyed themselves. So here, each demon met Ram, was getting the association of Lord Ram. But what did he do after meeting Ram? Tried to kill Ram. So they themselves got destroyed. So here, Parikshit Maharaj is introducing the concept that, please describe the character. What gave Parikshit Maharaj Ambarish the strength? Just quickly conclude. This is the last verse. Shukadev Maharaj says that Ambarish was the most fortunate personality, achieved the rule of the entire world consisting of the seven islands. And although he was in such a position which was rare to obtain, he did not care for it all. For he knew very well that such opulence is material. And he likened it to a dream state. He didn't care for it. And Prabhupada mentions about how material opulence is really insignificant. So the understanding, just a couple of things I wanted to talk about this and we'll conclude. Why material satisfaction is really not satisfying? Very interesting point Bhaktirtha Maharaj makes in one book. He says that material satisfaction is not satisfying because each living entity has experienced in his past a satisfaction which is much, much greater when he was in the spiritual world. And after experiencing that satisfaction when he comes to the material world, whatever satisfaction he gets in the material world cannot satisfy him. Very simple understanding, profound. Now if you compare the life of Durvas Muni and the life of Ambarish Maharaj, you understand that each one was a life completely different, right? What was Durvas Muni? Austerity personified. And even Ambarish Maharaj was austerity personified in that one sense. So many days of Ekadasi Vrata. But what is the result of austerity? The result of austerity is that your heart should become like soft like butter. But instead of becoming soft like butter, Durvas Muni almost became like a touch me not. In a touch me not plant, the moment you touch it shrinks. So Durvas Muni was like almost like a touch me not plant. Rather than the austerity giving him softness of the heart, it gave him the hardness of the heart. And Durvas Muni, rather than cultivating positive thoughts, he was only harboring negative thoughts. So this is not a sign of leadership. If you think positively about others, then you can actually achieve great things. Durvas Muni was like a teacher. Typically, he was like a teacher. But in this particular pastime, he was teaching us what not to do. So in everyone's life, you can learn different things. And from some people's life, you can learn what not to do. And here, the concept what Durvas Muni is teaching us is that ego, it burns hotter than fire. Maharaj, Radhana Swami Maharaj was making this point that ego is something that can actually destroy people's lives. And spiritualists are expert in detecting this ego. Like Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he met Keshav Kashmiri, he did not find defect in the words of Keshav Kashmiri. What he found defect was in the ego of Keshav Kashmiri. So he rectified that defect. The words were secondary, that is like immaterial. It didn't matter so much. But the ego of Keshav Kashmiri was defective and he rectified that. And just to conclude that devotional austerity can affect the world. Ambarish Maharaj, historically, you can see that when somebody exhibits great faith, it attracts great powers. And Ambarish Maharaj actually showed the capacity and the faith he had in the Lord. And the externals actually don't matter, but the consciousness really does. So, just the last analogy of Krishna, there is in the Bhagavatam, I think in the first canto, this example comes of how the whole world, the material world is like an ocean. And if somebody wants to get out of this ocean, he needs to take shelter of some boat. And Krishna's lotus feet are like a boat. And when somebody takes shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, when he sits on that boat, a very interesting phenomena happens. It's something that you can't conceive, but it happens. See, when somebody sits in a boat, the boat goes across the ocean and you reach the other shore. But in this case, something else happens. The moment you sit in the boat, the whole ocean shortens and the ocean becomes small. And you don't even need a boat. You can just jump across, provided you take shelter of the boat. So problems of this world are like the ocean, which are huge. And the solution is taking shelter of Krishna. So when you take shelter of Krishna, the problems of this world appear very small. And if you don't take shelter of Krishna, even the small problems of this world appear very big. Thank you very much. I hope what I've spoken made some sense. And I hope I didn't act arrogant or stupid. And I'm asking blessings from all the devotees, all the senior devotees and everyone else who's present here to kindly help me to actually realize and apply what I have spoken. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki...